meditation, and concentration. Sri Ramana's insistence that awareness of the I thought was a prerequisite for self-realization led him to the conclusion that all spiritual practices which did not incorporate this feature were indirect and inefficient. This path, attention to the I, is the direct path. All others are indirect ways. The first leads to the self, the others elsewhere. And even if the latter do arrive at the self, it is only because they lead at the end to the first path, which ultimately carries them to the goal. So in the end, the aspirants must adopt the first path. Why not do so now? Why waste time? That is to say, other techniques may sometimes bring one to an inner state of stillness in which self-attention or self-awareness inadvertently takes place. It is a very roundabout way of reaching the self. Sri Ramana maintained that other techniques could only take one to the place where self-inquiry starts, and so he never endorsed them unless he felt that particular questioners were unable or unwilling to adopt self-inquiry. This is illustrated by a conversation in Sri Ramana Gita, an early collection of his questions and answers, in which Sri Ramana explained in detail why self-inquiry was the only way to realize the self. After listening carefully to Sri Ramana's explanation, the questioner was still unwilling to accept that self-inquiry was the only route to the self, and so he asked if there were any other methods by which the self could be realized. Sri Ramana replied, "The goal is the same for the one who meditates on an object and the one who practices self-inquiry. One attains stillness through meditation, the other through knowledge. One strives to attain something, the other seeks the one who strives to attain. The former takes a longer time, but in the end attains the self." Not wanting to shake the faith of a man who had a known predilection for subject-object meditation, and having already ascertained that he was unwilling to take up self-inquiry, Sri Ramana encouraged him to follow his own chosen method by telling him that it would enable him to reach the self. In Sri Ramana's view, any method is better than no method, since there is always the possibility that it will lead to self-inquiry. He gave many other similar replies to other people for similar reasons. These replies, which indicate that methods other than self-inquiry or surrender could result in self-realization, should not be taken at face value, since they were only given to people who were not attracted to self-inquiry and who wanted to follow their own methods. When he spoke to other devotees who were not attached to what he called indirect methods, he would usually reaffirm that self-attention was ultimately indispensable. Although Sri Ramana vigorously defended his views on self-inquiry, he never insisted that anyone change their beliefs or practices. And if he was unable to convince his followers to take up self-inquiry, he would happily give advice on other methods. In the conversations in this chapter, he is mostly answering questions from devotees who wanted advice on conventional forms of meditation, dhyana. In giving this advice, he usually defined meditation as concentration on one thought to the exclusion of all others. But he sometimes gave it a higher definition by saying that keeping the mind fixed in the self was true meditation. This latter practice is really another name for self-inquiry, for as he explained in one of his early written works, always keeping the mind fixed in self alone is called self-inquiry, whereas meditation is thinking oneself to be Brahman. What is the difference between meditation, dhyana, and investigation, vichara? Both amount to the same. Those unfit for investigation must practice meditation. In meditation, the aspirant, forgetting himself, meditates, "I am Brahman," or "I am Siva," and by this method holds on to Brahman or Siva. This will ultimately end with the residual awareness of Brahman or Siva as being. He will then realize that this is pure being, that is, the self. He who engages in investigation starts by holding on to himself and by asking himself, "Who am I?" the self becomes clear to him. Mentally imaging oneself to be the supreme reality, which shines as existence consciousness bliss, is meditation. Fixing the mind in the self so that the unreal seed of delusion will die is inquiry. Whoever meditates upon the self in whatever bhava, mental image, attains it only in that image. Those peaceful ones who remain quiet without any such bhava attain the noble and unqualified state of kaivalya, the formless state of the self. Meditation is more direct than investigation because the former holds on to the truth, whereas the latter sifts the truth from the untruth. For the beginner, meditation on a form is more easy and agreeable. Practice of it leads to self-inquiry, which consists in sifting the reality from unreality. What is the use of holding on to truth when you are filled with antagonistic factors? Self-inquiry directly leads to realization by removing the obstacles which make you think that the self is not already realized. Meditation differs according to the degree of advancement of the seeker. If one is fit for it, one might directly hold on to the thinker, and the thinker would then automatically sink into his source, pure consciousness. If one cannot directly hold on to the thinker, one must meditate on God. And in due course, the same individual will have become sufficiently pure to hold on to the thinker and to sink into absolute being. Meditation is possible only if the ego is kept up. There is the ego and the object meditated upon. The method is therefore indirect because the self is only one. Seeking the ego that is its source, the ego disappears. What is left over is the self. This method is the direct one. There is no way found to go inward by means of meditation. Where else are we now? Our very being is that. Being so, we are ignorant of it. Ignorant of what and whose is the ignorance? If ignorant of the self, are there two selves? There are not two selves. The feeling of limitation cannot be denied, due to limitations. Limitation is only in the mind. Did you feel it in deep sleep? You exist in sleep. You do not deny your existence then. The same self is here and now in the wakeful state. You are now saying that there are limitations. What has now happened is that there are these differences between the two states. The differences are due to the mind. There was no mind in sleep, whereas it is active now. The self exists in the absence of the mind also. Although it is understood, it is not realized. It will be by and by with meditation. Meditation is with mind. How can it kill the mind in order to reveal the self? Meditation is sticking to one thought. That single thought keeps away other thoughts. Distraction of the mind is a sign of its weakness. By constant meditation, it gains strength. That is to say, the weakness of fugitive thought gives place to the enduring background free from thought. This expanse, devoid of thought, is the self. Mind in purity is the self. What is dhyana, meditation? It is abiding as oneself, without swerving in any way from one's real nature and without feeling that one is meditating. What is the difference between dhyana and samadhi? Dhyana is achieved through deliberate mental effort. In samadhi, there is no such effort. What are the factors to be kept in view in dhyana? It is important for one who is established in his self, atmanishta, to see that he does not swerve in the least from this absorption. By swerving from his true nature, he may see before him bright effulgences, or hear unusual sounds, or regard as real the visions of gods appearing within or outside himself. He should not be deceived by these and forget himself. How is meditation to be practiced? Meditation is, truly speaking, atmanishta, to be fixed as the self. But when thoughts cross the mind and an effort is made to eliminate them, the effort is usually termed meditation. Atmanishta is your real nature. Remain as you are. That is the aim. But thoughts come up. Is our effort meant to eliminate thoughts only? Yes. Meditation being on a single thought, the other thoughts are kept away. Meditation is only negative, in effect, inasmuch as thoughts are kept away. It is said that Atman Stam, Mana Kritva, fixing the mind in the self. But the self is unthinkable. Why do you wish to meditate at all? Because you wish to do so, you are told, Atma Sastam Mana Kritva. Why not remain as you are without meditating? What is that mana, mind? When all thoughts are eliminated, it becomes Atma Samsta, fixed in the self. If a form is given, I can meditate on it and other thoughts are eliminated. But the self is formless. Meditation on forms or concrete objects is said to be dhyana, whereas the inquiry into the self is vichara, inquiry, anididhyasana, uninterpreted awareness of being. There is more pleasure in dhyana than in sensual enjoyments, yet the mind runs after the latter and does not seek the former. Why is it so? There is more pleasure in dhyana than in sensual enjoyments, yet the mind runs after the latter and does not seek the former. Why is it so? Pleasure or pain are aspects of the mind only. Our essential nature is happiness. But we have forgotten the self and imagine that the body or the mind is the self. It is that wrong identity that gives rise to misery. What is to be done? This mental tendency is very ancient and has continued for innumerable past births. Hence it has grown strong. That must go before the essential nature of happiness asserts itself. How is dhyana practiced, with eyes open or closed? It may be done, either way. The point is that the mind must be introverted and kept active in its pursuit. Sometimes it happens that when the eyes are closed, the latent thoughts rush forth with great vigor. It may also be difficult to introvert the mind with the eyes open. It requires strength of mind to do so. The mind is contaminated when it takes in objects. Otherwise, it is pure. The main factor in dhyana is to keep the mind active in its own pursuit, without taking in external impressions or thinking of other matters. Bhagavan, whenever I meditate, I feel great heat in the head, and if I persist, my whole body burns. What is the remedy? If concentration is made with the brain, sensations of heat and even headache ensue. Concentration has to be made in the heart, which is cool and refreshing. Relax, and your meditation will be easy. Keep your mind steady by gently warding off all intruding thoughts, but without strain. Soon, you will succeed. How do I prevent myself falling asleep in meditations? If you try to prevent sleep, it will mean thinking in meditation, which must be avoided. But if you slip into sleep while meditating, the meditation will continue even during and after sleep. Yet, being a thought, sleep must not be got rid of. For the final, natural state has to be obtained consciously in Jagrat, the waking state, without the disturbing thought. Waking and sleeping are mere pictures on the screen of the native, thought-free state. Let them pass unnoticed. What is to be meditated upon? Anything that you prefer. Shiva, Vishnu, and Gayatri are said to be equally efficacious. Which should I meditate upon? Anyone you like best. They are all equal in their effect, but you should stick to one. How do I meditate? Concentrate on that one whom you like best. If a single thought prevails, all other thoughts are put off and finally eradicated. So long as diversity prevails, there are bad thoughts. When the object of love prevails, only good thoughts hold the field. Therefore, hold on to one thought only. Dhyana is the chief practice. Dhyana means fight. As soon as you begin meditation, other thoughts will crowd together, gather force, and try to sink the single thought to which you try to hold. The good thought must gradually gain strength by repeated practice. After it has grown strong, the other thoughts will be put to flight. This is the battle royal always taking place in meditation. One wants to rid oneself of misery. It requires peace of mind, which means absence of perturbation owing to all kinds of thoughts. Peace of mind is brought about by dhyana alone. Since Sri Bhagavan says that the self may function at any of the centers or chakras while its seat is in the heart, is it not possible that by the practice of intense concentration or dhyana between the eyebrows, this center may become the seat of the self? Any consideration about the seat of the self is theoretical if you fix your attention on a place in the body. You consider yourself as the subject, the seer, and the place where you fix your attention becomes the object seen. This is merely bhavana, mental imagery. When on the contrary, you see the seer himself, you merge in the self, and you become one with it. That is the heart. Is the practice of concentration between the eyebrows advisable? The final result of the practice of any kind of dhyana is that the object on which the seeker fixes his mind ceases to exist as distinct and separate from the subject. They, the subject and object, become the one self, and that is the heart. Why does not Sri Bhagavan direct us to practice concentration on some particular center or chakra? Yoga Sastra says that the Sahasrara, the chakra located in the brain, or the brain is the seat of the self. Purusha Sukta declares that the heart is its seat. To enable the sadhaka to steer clear of possible doubt, I tell him to take up the thread or the clue of I-ness or I-am-ness and follow it up to its source. Because firstly, it is impossible for anybody to entertain any doubt about this I notion. Secondly, whatever be the means adopted, the final goal is the realization of the source of I-am-ness, which is the primary datum of your experience. If you therefore practice self-inquiry, you will reach the heart, which is the self. I practice Hatha Yoga and I also meditate. I am Brahman. After a few moments of this meditation, the blank prevails, the brain gets heated, and a fear of death arises. What should I do? I am Brahman is only a thought. Who says it? Brahman itself does not say so. What need is there for it to say it? Nor can the real I say so, for I always abides as Brahman. To be saying it is only a thought. Whose thought is it? All thoughts are from the unreal I that is the I thought. Remain without thinking. So long as there is thought, there will be fear. As I go on thinking of it, there is forgetfulness. The brain becomes heated and I am afraid. Yes, the mind is concentrated in the brain and hence you get a hot sensation there. It is because of the I thought. When the I thought arises, fear of death arises simultaneously. With regard to forgetfulness, so long as there is thought, there will be forgetfulness. First, there is the thought, I am Brahman. Then forgetfulness supervenes. Forgetfulness and thought are for the I thought only. Hold on to it and it will disappear like a phantom. What remains over is the real I, and that is the self. I am Brahman is an aid to concentration, since it keeps off other thoughts. When that one thought alone persists, see whose thought it is. It will be found to be from I. From where is the I thought? Probe into it. The I thought will vanish and the Supreme Self will shine forth of itself. No further effort is needed. when the one real I remains alone, it will not be saying, I am Brahman. Does a man go on repeating, I am a man? Unless he is challenged, why should he declare himself a man? Does anyone mistake himself for an animal that he should say, no, I am not an animal, I am a man? Similarly, Brahman or I being the only existing reality, there is no one there to challenge it, and so there is no need to be repeating, I am Brahman. Why should one adopt this self-hypnotism by thinking on the unthinkable point? Why not adopt other methods like gazing into light, holding the breath, hearing music, hearing internal sounds, repetition of the sacred syllable Om, or other mantras? Light gazing stupefies the mind and produces catalepsy of the will for the time being, but it secures no permanent benefit. Breath control temporarily benumbs the will, but it is not permanent. It is the same with listening to sounds. Unless the mantra is sacred and secures the help of a higher power to purify and raise the thoughts. We are advised to concentrate on the spot in the forehead between the eyebrows. Is this right? Everyone is aware, I am. Leaving aside that awareness, one goes about in search of God. What is the use of fixing one's attention between the eyebrows? It is a mere folly to say that God is between the eyebrows. The aim of such advice is to help the mind to concentrate. It is one of the forcible methods to check the mind and prevent its dissipation. It is forcibly directed into one channel. It is a help to concentration. But the best means of realization is the inquiry, who am I? The present trouble is to the mind, and it must be removed by the mind only. I do not always concentrate on the same center in the body. Sometimes I find it easier to concentrate on one center and sometimes on another. And sometimes when I concentrate on one center, the thought of its own accord goes and fixes itself in another. Why is that? It may be because of past practices of yours, but in any case, it is immaterial on which center you concentrate, since the real heart is in every center and even outside the body. On whatever part of the body you may concentrate or on whatever external object, the heart is there. Can one concentrate at one time on one center and at another time on another, or should one concentrate always consistently on the same center? As I have just said, there can be no harm wherever you concentrate, because concentration is only a means of giving up thoughts. Whatever the center or object on which you concentrate, he who concentrates is always the same. Some say that one should practice meditation on gross objects only. It may be disastrous if one constantly seeks to kill the mind. For whom is it disastrous? Can there be disaster apart from the self? Unbroken I is the infinite ocean. The ego, the I-thought, remains only a bubble on it, and is called jiva, or individual soul. The bubble, too, is water, for when it bursts, it only mixes in the ocean. When it remains a bubble, it is still part of the ocean. Ignorant of this simple truth, innumerable methods under different denominations such as yoga, bhakti, karma, each again with many modifications, are being taught with great skill and in intricate detail only to entice the seekers and confuse their minds. So also are the religions and sects and dogmas. What are they all for? Only for knowing the self. They are aids and practices required for knowing the self. Objects perceived by the senses are spoken of as immediate knowledge, pratyaksha. Can anything be as direct as the self, always experienced without the aid of the senses? Sense perceptions can only be indirect knowledge and not direct knowledge. Only one's own awareness is direct knowledge, and that is the common experience of one and all. No aids are needed to know one's own self.